Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening? Hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everybody, to the Weekend Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. We've got guys who eat, breathe, sleep sports, reporters from all over North America, ready to talk to you here on the Weekend Sports Report. John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, will be talking hockey later in the program, but most of the show is going to be NFL. And we've got Kip Lewis from Comcast Sports Chicago, who will join us in the next segment, talking Bears football. We have audio from Steve Leventhal, and we'll hear from Bears coaches and players in the next segment. Also, Jeff Rich from the Sports Byline USA Network, looking around the rest of the NFL, and a little college football discussion there also. But Green Bay, a big last play of the game win. You've heard all about it, of course. The Packers beat the Lions in Detroit on Aaron Rodgers' 61-yard rocket launch that lands in the hand of Richard Rodgers in the end zone. Packers get a win in Detroit and move to 8-4. We'll see what happens with the Vikings and the Seahawks on Sunday. Packers could still be in second place, or they could be in first place because of the tiebreaker with their win over Minnesota earlier a few weeks ago. But a lot of debate on that play. Was it a face mask or not? I didn't really think it was when you looked at the replay, but they called it. I did think it was a pass interference play before the big lateral play that set up that winning touchdown pass on Aberderis on the sideline there, right towards the very end of the game. They didn't call that one, but they called the face mask, and we all know what happened from there. It went our way finally. Remember the Fail Mary a few years ago against Seattle? That went against us. Well, this one went for us. And after a few late rallies against Chicago and Carolina and Detroit, where Green Bay came up just short, they finally get a win. Lucky, really. But, of course, the Packers will take it. They still have a lot of work to do. What's with Eddie Lacy? A lot of people, after two 100-yard games, he gets five carries under 10 yards. Guy named John Crockett comes off of the practice squad, was activated, I think, that day, and he contributes in the game. And Devontae Adams finally had a decent game for Green Bay. But let's hear from Aaron Rodgers Thursday night after that spectacular play.
Yeah, you know, we were in a different personnel than we usually are for that final play. We were in our five wide set. There were four wides and Richard. I knew I was going to have to buy some time. They rushed three guys. In that situation, you know, a lot of times we practice from like the 50 or maybe the plus 45. I knew we were around the 40, minus 40. I knew I was going to have to buy some time, allow them to get in the end zone. I felt good about being able to throw in the end zone from the 40. So I was just kind of looking at the rush and moving around. Guys did a good job of holding their blocks, and I knew once I got outside the right, I was going to be able to set up and throw. And it was just about finding the 40 and stopping before that and then putting enough height for my guys to get in the end zone. I was looking at Devontae after I threw it, and I was pretty excited to see Richard jump in there and catch it.
Amazing. And Aaron Rodgers said to CBS after the game, his most memorable win, the one he's most happy with since the Super Bowl win after the 2010 season. All right, let's hear from Coach Mike McCarthy after the game.
We're very happy. We needed a win like that. We've been bouncing up and down a little bit here down the stretch, in the second stage of our season. But you talk about grit and guys just keep battling, and that's really the story of tonight's win. So I thought, we had the slow start. I thought defensively, it kept us in the game. Really, in the first half with the field position switch on the poor punt, they had the field goal come off of that. They had that interception, and Kelvin made a big-time catch there in the end zone. And we had to, you know, the misalignment down there. So really, you know, three or four plays in the first half, that's really what we talked about at halftime. And, I mean, there's just – we were convinced we were going to win the game. Didn't know how. Didn't think it was always going to come down to that. But this team has a lot of fight. The injuries and the number of hurdles that we had to overcome is obvious. I think it just speaks to the character of our football team. And my goodness, can Aaron Rodgers throw the football. So with all that, a great final play and an excellent Packer win.
Okay, and what would people be saying right now about McCarthy if that play didn't happen and the Packers came out of there with that lucky win? Also, Mason Crosby missing a 41-yard field goal early in the game. That could have been the difference. Packers, though, come away with a win. Their next game is Dallas in Green Bay next Sunday, late afternoon game on at Lambeau Field. Okay, a lot of Bears discussion coming up when we return on the Weekend Sports Report.
Tired of scratching the floor every time you move the couch? I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll talk about furniture moving that's easy on the floors and your back right after this. Old, ugly, or damaged bathtubs and sinks don't have to be ripped out and replaced. Save money and give new life to bathroom fixtures with Homax Toughest Tile Spray-On Epoxy Finish. Preparation is the key, so follow the directions carefully and don't cut any corners. With Homax Toughest Tile, you can refinish your bathtub or sink yourself and get great results without hiring a professional. Homax, creating better homes. With the holidays approaching, there tends to be a lot of rearranging and shuffling in many homes. So here's a few tips to get the job done without calling a floor refinisher or the chiropractor. Try gluing bunion pads onto the bottom of the feet of tables and chairs so they can be moved easily without scratching the finish on the flooring. For heavier furniture, try using a piece of plush carpet under the legs, pile side down, or a heavy blanket to create a cushioned moving surface. If you don't have bunion pads, extra carpet, or a blanket handy, slip some heavy socks onto the legs or place each leg into a shoe made from the bottom half of a milk carton. The furniture will slide easier and your floors and back will thank you. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
We practiced it a little bit in pregame. Aaron was throwing up really high balls and I was catching them. And I kind of saw the same thing. I ran down there, saw the ball, and I made sure I was in the end zone and then went up and caught it.
Devontae said it was hard to track. It got up so high. Did you have any trouble finding it?
I think the practice before the game helped a little bit on that.
Hi there, this is Chris Berman from ESPN. Hey, Packer Dave, I know you know about the frozen tundra, but about the rest of football, do a little boning up, eh?
I've been boning up, and not since the Sterling Sharp reception in the playoffs for a touchdown to eliminate Detroit in 1993 with Brett Favre at the helm was there such an exciting finish to a game.
Yeah.
As Aaron Rodgers to Richard Rodgers in Detroit, putting Green Bay at 8-4, and we'll see what happens with Minnesota and Seattle this weekend. But now, let's talk Bears football. From Comcast Sports Chicago, and Steve Leventhal is with me right now. We'll get some audio from the Bears after we're done talking with Kip, Steve. But Kip Lewis from Comcast Sports Network Chicago. Kip, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Hey, right. first timer on the show.
Yeah, very first. Well, usually people are first and last timers.
Yeah.
It's like, you want to come back on the show? They're like, I'm kind of busy. My cat's got to go to the vet.
Got to wash my hair.
All right, Kip, let's talk about the Bears. And first, let me ask you, what has impressed you most about the Bears this year? They're looking to get to 500 against 49ers this Sunday. Impressive so far. I didn't think they'd be here. What about you?
You know, I couldn't really say at the beginning of the season. I think whenever you have so many changes on a roster and you've got an entirely new coaching staff, basically, you never know what you're going to get. And I think when you watch them after the first three games of the season, you probably said wait until next year or the year after that. But I think, you know, if there's one thing that's impressed me, I would say just the way you know, maybe their resiliency, the way they sort of stuck together. I think even in the bad times, you know, just being in the locker room and talking to guys after the game, you know, this is they always kind of believed that they had, you know, enough guys to get the job done. They play hard. I think anyone that's paid attention to the team during the course of the season knows that the players certainly believe in the coaching staff. You know, you hear a lot of guys talk about Adam Gase and Vic Fangio and their schemes and the way they attack, you know, opposing offenses and defenses. And now, you know, I mean, after that win Thursday night, they certainly have a sense, you know, guys are talking playoffs. And I don't know if they're really a playoff team, but if you look around the NFC, you know, they're not very many good teams. But they certainly believe, you know, right now they're definitely a playoff-type team.
What's the difference in Jay Cutler this year from what you've seen in the previous few years?
Yeah, well, obviously the interceptions. I think he had 6 interceptions. But, you know, part of that is the fact sometimes a guy gets it. I didn't think, and, you know, we still have 5 games to go. So, I mean, he could throw, you know, 6 or 7 more interceptions. You never know. But I think at least to this point, it's gotten into his head that he's got to take care of the football. And sometimes that's luck, but sometimes if you have coaches that pound it into your head, you know, you guys just played that Green Bay thing from last night. And I know my dad was for the Packers for 8 or 9 years. And one of the things they tried to get into Brett Favre's head was don't throw interceptions. It never really got into Brett's head, but, you know, Brett was Brett and he could get away with it. But I think that Jay finally realized that, you know, for him to be a better quarterback and for the team to be better, sometimes you don't always have to make the big play. You see it around the NFL a lot. Sometimes if you just don't turn the football over and you have a defense like they do that doesn't give up a lot of points, you always kind of have a chance to win the game. And you see John Fox is an older coach. His approach is, you know, don't make mistakes. And typically the teams you see that lose games are the teams that make big mistakes, whether it's too many penalties, turnovers, because eventually if you don't turn the ball over, a lot of times field position it comes back your way, and you certainly don't want to give an opposing team extra possessions, which is, you know, really what happens when you turn the football over.
Kip Lewis with us from Comcast Sports Chicago. You said your dad did what for the Packers for a few years?
He was the offensive coordinator for the Packers for 8 years.
Sherm Lewis?
From 92 to... I don't know, 99 maybe.
Sherman Lewis.
Yeah.
Your dad, Sherm Lewis?
That is.
Steve, you told me Kip was coming on the air. You said, do you have any idea his dad was Sherman Lewis?
Oh, he's dancing around on the couch now doing his best Tom Cruise.
Hey, answer the question, bright boy. Did you know his dad was Sherman Lewis?
No, Your Honor.
God. We are so handicapped.
Because I treat my colleagues as for who they are. They're their colleagues.
Whatever.
They're not the
opposite. You had no clue. That's the answer.
Hey, you got to give them a break. I don't go around and advertise it. I'm almost AARP age, so I don't run around and say that.
He is AARP age, and based on his performance lately, I think he's due for permanent retirement.
Oh, yeah. I'm Dave. I'm a few steps away from the glue factory.
Oh, man. I can't believe it. You have the Packers offensive coordinator kid on the show. And I know you're...
No, I have one of my sports colleagues, Kip Lewis.
Whatever. Okay. All right. Well, Kip Lewis from Comcast Sports Chicago and son, a former Packer offensive coordinator. Sherman Lewis, welcome to the show. Glad to have you. Before we continue now on this Bears discussion, which now we're totally
now we're going to a Packer discussion. I can see that coming.
Kip, any memories back there of Green Bay and your dad? You must have like hung around Lambeau Field some, you know? Come on, give us a skinny.
I was there in training camp myself in 92, and Ron Wolf cut me, so that's my worst memory.
Wait, ho. Steve, did you know that Kip was a player and was in Packer camp? Did you know that part?
Well, you know the answer to that question. It's the same as the answer to the first question.
Like all of them with Steve. No. This may be Steve's last show, Kip.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to offer you a job.
That's fantastic. Yeah, we'll have to get contact information after the show. Steve, it's been a nice career, okay? So you were in camp. So you were there in 92 when Favre and the Magic Man Don Majkowski was there. Mike Tomczak was on the team then, right?
Yeah, I think it was Tomczak, Majkowski, and then that was Brett's first year. It was Mike Holmgren's for that whole staff first year as a staff. But yeah, I was there when Brett first came there. He used to listen to rap music back then.
Oh my God! And Steve Mariucci was there. John Gruden, those guys.
Yeah, Gruden was the offensive quality control coach. Ray Rhodes was the defensive coordinator. Sterling was there. My boy Chuck Cecil from the University of Arizona was there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that where you went to school? University of Arizona? ASU?
Yeah. I played at the University of Arizona.
At Tucson.
Oh, Tucson. Okay. I'm coming to you from Tempe, Arizona, just so you know, Kip. Steve didn't tell you that or anything, you know. this is amazing.
Yeah, that's because the restraining order says you got to be at least six states away from here.
Steve gets one of the best guests he's ever been able to secure and has no idea. It's a total fluke. All right, Kip Lewis with us, Comcast Sports Chicago. All right, before we get back into the Bears, your impression of the Packers back then, your training camp, your experiences there, and your dad was there too. Was that... a lot to do with your dad bringing you in there? Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. I've never ever in however many years that's been since 92 ever, I've never talked about it publicly. So, it was interesting. I had been in Arizona when I was there, we didn't throw the football. I think I was the leading receiver that year. I started two straight years, and I think my senior year I had 9 catches. And so I was 165 pounds. And I went to Detroit Lions because back then Wayne Fonts was there, Miles Davis, they were running the run and shoot. Barry Sanders was there, Rodney Peete, Eric Kramer. It was the same year they drafted Andre Ware. And so I went there as a free agent and got injured right away, got cut, played in the World League for 2 years with New York, New Jersey Knights. And I got a lot of interest from different teams after that. And my dad, it just happened to be that my dad was going to Green Bay that year and he had seen their receivers and he genuinely thought I could make their team. So I begrudgingly went there. I wasn't sure I really wanted to go somewhere where my dad was coaching, especially since I, you know, hadn't made an NFL team. But he convinced me to go up there and, I actually had a pretty good camp. I hurt my hamstring, maybe the second week of camp. And I didn't really know. I don't think Ron Wolf at the time, to be honest, really wanted me up there because it was a new staff. And I just don't think he wanted that situation, which I think we kind of found out later that, you know, I really didn't have a chance there. It was a good experience. I mean, I loved, you know, I didn't know a lot about Green Bay at the time. And, you know, even though I'm living in Chicago, it was one of the coolest experiences, even for training camp and preseason, because, you know, anyone that's been to Green Bay, it's just a different atmosphere during training camp with all the fans right there at practice. You know, you're riding the bikes out with the kids and people camping out in campers for a week at a time. I mean, literally people get married in the parking lot. It's just a very different atmosphere. So I enjoyed it. And then I came back in 96. Really, my first real TV job was in Green Bay for 3 years.
Where?
Hired me.
Where? Where was it?
The Fox station in Green Bay hired me, and they did back then. I don't know if they still do it, but they did all the Packer pre- and post-game shows. We did a training camp show every day. So I went up there to do a lot of football stuff. So I lived in Green Bay for 3 years while my dad was coaching there. And that was a great experience, too. Obviously, two of those years, they went to the Super Bowl. The 1 year they won in New Orleans, then they lost I guess was it San Diego?
Well, they lost in San Diego against Denver. I covered that one.
Yeah, John Elway. Yep. And then the year before they beat the Patriots when in that game. So, you know, it was, I enjoyed it. I mean, I know a lot about Green Bay. You know, my parents were there for a long time. Know a lot about the organization. I still, you know, a lot, you know, as you know, a lot of people in the Green Bay organization have been there for a long time. So, you know, it's a great place. I mean, it's very unique in terms of the way other NFL teams and cities are. But, you know, there's certainly a reason why they've had success. They've really kind of done things the same way since 92 when that staff went there.
Okay. Was it WBAY that you worked at?
No, WLUK,
Fox TV, yeah. TV 11, Green Bay. All right, their studios are right there by right where Lambeau Field is at in Brown County Arena.
Oh yeah, it's right. Yeah, it's right next to the stadium. We used to walk out our door across the street into the parking lot to do our pre and post game show.
Unbelievable!
Right next to the largest John Deere dealership in the U.S. Probably.
Hey, don't knock John Deere. You don't know anything about farming. Obviously, you don't know anything about your guests.
That's on the bucket list. Oh. Is making the trip up to Lambeau one of these days before.
You haven't ever been there, Steve?
No, I haven't. It's just
You've
the cars.
Been covering the Bears and the Packers on this show since we started in '93.
Yeah.
Steve.
How many of these games lately have been Thursday night, Sunday night? It's a little tough to work out the logistics.
I am so embarrassed for this show. All right, Kip, back to the Bears. And very interesting stuff here.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
With your dad and you actually trying out for the Packers. That's unbelievable. That's funny. Okay, so you've got the Bears and the 49ers. People are going to pick Chicago in that game, obviously. But what do you think here? How do you think this plays out at Soldier Field?
You know how the NFL is. I'm always a little worried when teams are, you know, they're supposed to win and another team's supposed to be so bad. But I just think the way this coaching staff has handled the team and the players have responded to the coaches, and I think the players knowing that where they started and where they are now and the opportunity they have ahead, I think the Bears will win. I think if you look at what San Francisco's done offensively, I mean, they've struggled. And it's hard to imagine that they're going to light up the Bears' defense and score enough points to win. You know, not that the Bears' offense is any juggernaut, but I just think the Bears, I think they're going to play well. I think that win against Green Bay did a lot for them. And I think they're going to, I would even say they'll win against Washington. And I think they're going to have a huge game that following week on December 20th at Minnesota.
So, Dave, one of the questions that you asked earlier, before you went off on this humongous Wisconsin cleat-lickage detour trip, you know, you sort of asked about Jay Cutler, and my observation was going to be, I think one of the things that Adam Gase has done that so well is not necessarily that he's dummied down the playbook, but he really sort of understands what Jay's strengths and weaknesses are, and he seems to have designed all the play calling to sort of maximize that.
Okay, well, I really didn't ask you, Steve. But go ahead, Kip. You can comment on Steve's ill-timed comment there.
You know, I would agree with that in some sense. I think sometimes you don't want to give a guy too much to think about. But in the NFL, it's difficult because, especially like you look at Green Bay and some of the things that they did last night, you look at some of the blitzes they brought, you know, a guy still has to be prepared for everything. But you certainly don't want to have him give him like a couple different checks to get out of place. You just want to say, hey, you know, we want to do one thing or the other. And I would agree with that. I think, you know, that's part of it, too. You want to make sure a guy's comfortable with what he's doing. And as coaches, you do learn how guys react mentally and how quick they respond to things. But I think Jason had a huge impact on him.
Okay, well, Kip Lewis, Comcast Sports Chicago. Kip, when I come to Chicago next time,
I knew this was coming.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. So invite him to like the silo or something. You can continue this cleat lickage going on.
We'll buy. And when I say will, that usually means me. Steve can come along because he'll be retired at that time and have a lot of time on his hands. We got to get together. You got a lot of stories. I want to hear them.
Yeah, definitely come by. I'm around. Come by. I got some partner in a sports bar with some of these other guys in town, some other sportscasters. You come by, hang out, watch the game, have some food. It'll be a good time.
He's more interested in what have you got for beer.
Yeah, what's on the draft select? No, you don't have to answer that. What facility before we let you go? What place? Where do you own?
It's called Brewery. R-E-V-E-R-I-E in River North. So whenever you're in town, just stop by.
All right. Well, we're getting together, and that'll be a lot of fun. Kip Lewis, Comcast Sports Chicago. Good segment. Maybe you'll actually come back on the show sometime.
I'll definitely come back. Well, we can talk Green Bay stuff, too. I know a lot about Green Bay.
All right.
Probably already looking at his calendar when he can fit you in.
All right. It's a mandate. We're going to do it. Okay, Kip. Thanks for coming on the show. Kip Lewis, Comcast Sports Chicago. Steve did get some audio for us regarding the Bears and the 49ers. So let's start with Coach John Fox. He talks about the San Francisco team, offense and defense. Here's Fox.
You know, I think offensively, I think, they're big and physical up front. You know, obviously they've had a change at quarterback, I believe about 3 weeks ago. Blaine Gabbert's a guy that was well thought of in this league, drafted very high. He's gotten another opportunity, and I think he's made the most of it. You know, they've got Anquan Boldin, who's a proven, ball catcher in this league. They went and got Torrey Smith outside, so they've got some speed. Patton's playing well for him. They're tight end position. They've had some things they've had to deal with running back wise. I think Drone's gone in and done a great job. They're an outstanding rush offense. Defensively, they held one of the most explosive teams in the league statistically in Arizona last week to 19 points. So they're very, very capable.
Good defense, not such a good offense for San Francisco. Now Bears tight end Martellus Bennett discusses the San Francisco defense.
Their defense is always coming around. I mean, they've been legendary for a while. They lost a lot of those guys, but you can't really look at the record. I mean, these guys play hard with Navarro Bowman on the other side. He's picking up right where Patrick Willis left off. The safeties, Eric Reed, is very physical. It's a very physical defense, so you got to bring the wood because, they want to try to stop the run, and, they got some good pass rushers and a lot of good players. So it's really just, bringing intensity that, they have to match our intensity, and now let's match their intensity. So it'd be a good battle up front, and looking forward to getting out there in Soldier Field and playing.
Martellus has sort of taken over the mantle as the go-to player when you need some good quote.
Okay, and he's kind of an interesting listen. Defensive coordinator for the Bears. Let me try that again, Steve. Defensive coordinator for the Bears, Vic Fangio. He's coaching against his own team. Let's listen to him.
I don't know that it's much of a huge advantage. Things like this happen every week in the NFL, and sometimes I think you can overdo it and try and think you know too much, And it works both ways. Obviously, there's a couple coaches there still that were with me the past couple 4 years there. So, it works both ways.
Okay, Vic Fangio. I'm going to do better on this one, Steve.
Vic sounds like he could be a Hollywood, it's like Chip this or Rock. Just like he could be a Hollywood stuntman or just a Hollywood star.
Sure he does, Steve. Well, you run with that. Jim Tomsula, coach of the 49ers on Jay Cutler.
First of all, with Jay Cutler, it's well documented with him with the way he's battled through the diabetes and what he's done there to me is an enormous thing and the utmost respect for the man and the way he's done that. And as a football player, I think Jay Cutler is a tremendous football player, and I think he's a tremendous quarterback, and he's doing a great job this year. But I've always thought he's been an extremely talented quarterback, and nothing but respect for him.
Steve, why get that cut? It said nothing. Why even put it on the slate?
Well, okay, if you heard the rest of what he said.
That's the best?
Slim pickings.
Jeez. Okay.
Hey, Jim Caldwell a run for his money in terms of quotability.
All right. Thanks, Steve, for that audio. Now we bring in from the Sports Byline USA radio network. You can hear him at 11 a.m. Eastern time this Sunday morning. That is 8 a.m. Pacific time at sportsbyline.com. Also the producer and host of the Suits and Laterals podcast at suitsandlaterals.com. He's Jeff Rich. Jeff, welcome into the show today.
Hey, it's good to be here. Let's also throw out the credit for
running a website called morethanafan.net. We got a lot of exciting things going on over there too, bringing on new authors and trying to take on some new coverage areas like horse racing, auto racing, that kind of thing. So it's exciting times all around, but I'm excited to talk about football with you guys.
Morethanafan.net. Horse racing?
You do? Yeah, we got a horse racing writer named Kim French out of the state of Kentucky. We're going to take bad news in the horse racing world. Shared Belief, a special horse, unfortunately passed away this week, and we're going to look back at that, and we're going to probably focus on the Triple Crown stuff. But horse racing is a year-round sport, and 50, 60 years ago is among the top three sports in the world to watch. Along with baseball and boxing before football really took on its popularity.
Okay, we're going to get to football in just a minute, everybody, so hang tight. But we kind of want to run with this a little bit. It's interesting. What, Steve?
I was going to say all those people are sad. All the broken-down horse players are saddened over this loss.
Yeah, well, it didn't shake the world like Barbaro, because Barbaro was supposed to be such a special horse. So Barbaro, Kentucky Derby winner, I want to say around, 2006.
Wasn't he on Welcome Back, Cotter?
Oh, that was Vinnie Barbarino.
Barbarino. I'm sorry. Okay.
I was born in 1978. I don't know all of your old pop culture references there, Packer Dave.
They didn't have a horse on that show, but they had a horse shack on the show.
What did they do at the horse shack?
What did they do? No, the character Arnold Horseshack. You know what I'm talking about, right, Jeff?
He knows. He's just messing with you.
Maybe he doesn't. He's not as old as you.
Hey, every excuse note that I ever wrote in high school was signed by Juan Epstein's mom.
Epstein's mother.
Juan Epstein. Okay, that was funny stuff. Oh, anything on curling on morethanafan.net or badminton?
We have a curling player that I believe you're familiar with, named John Poulter, whose curling schedule that we work around. So yeah, I mean, there's I don't know that we cover it as much as we're involved with it. We acknowledge that it exists.
What about biathlon or figure skating?
Enough.
Is biathlon the one where you shoot, or is that something else?
Yeah, shoot and cross-country ski. Still trying to wrap my hands around that every time I watch the Winter Olympics.
Jeff, if you want a curling segment and want to extend the length of your show for about 35 minutes, have John Poulter on to talk about curling every week. It can happen, I'll tell you. Okay, now let's look at the NFL, all the different games this week. But first, let's go back to that Thursday night game, Green Bay and Detroit. This is a game... You're going to remember where you were, who you were with, what was going on. So where were you, and what did you think about the end of that thing?
Well, it was a very special night for me. I was sitting on the couch eating sausage and spaghetti, and it was 17-0 at halftime, and I felt like I had to jump ship. I thought that, it's no longer time to R-E-L-A-X.
You turned it off?
Turned it off. It was a blowout.
Dave, I came in the best part. I came back from paying a condolence call, came in, it was about midway through the fourth quarter, and that's when all the action started.
Yeah.
Well, I did watch a lot of the second half through my radio partner on Sports Byline, Andy Dorf. He's also something of a Packers fan, and it was easy to follow the game. It was kind of vague because you had to say, here comes the man. I guess that means the Packers are doing well.
So you didn't watch the game, but you were following it on social media. Is that the story?
The second half I followed on social media. The first half I watched Detroit just dominate. I watched Aaron Rodgers look lost. I watched both teams in that game really forfeit their pass rush for the sake of downfield coverage. And you watch these quarterbacks with 5, 6, 7 seconds to throw, and you figure somebody's got to be open. I got to commend the Packers for really D'ing up on Matthew Stafford after the good first half that Detroit got out to.
Okay. But Jeff did not see the second half. Steve, you and I need a conference after the show.
I saw it.
Okay,
there was a long pass or something at the end. Is that familiar to you?
We'll conference after the show, Steve, to determine Jeff's future here on the show. Okay, Jeff, let's look at some other games that maybe you teams that you might watch, and we'll talk about these ones. The Chicago Bears, they've got the San Francisco 49ers coming into town. The Bears at 5-6 right now. you know, important game, they can get to 500, be right in this wild card hunt. Do you think the Bears have a shot at being 500 after this weekend?
Do the Bears have a shot at being 500 coming into this one? 5-6, playing a hapless 49ers team with an organization in disarray? I would say that they definitely do. I think that this is a window for the Bears. You know, once Adam Gase leaves your team, you know, there's a little bit of regression. I think we saw it in Denver this year, and, you know, I think we'll see it in Chicago next year when Adam Gase is the head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
Okay.
Oh, mighty bold statement there.
Are you sure about that, huh?
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that if I'm a quarterback guru, you know, the job that I want isn't a job like Cleveland, you know, or anywhere else without a quarterback. I think that Ryan Tannehill is serviceable. I think that he's kind of like Phillip Rivers, where you know, you're not going to believe it until he really shows you. But if you can elevate his game a little bit, they've got some weapons there in Miami. You know, leadership's a question, and getting that defense together is a big deal too. But you know, I think that if I'm Adam Gase, I've been the hot coach on the market along with Josh McDaniels for the last couple of years, I'm going to find the right situation for myself.
Okay, and I take it back. That was a dumb question. Of course, Chicago has a chance to go to 5-5. I should have phrased that differently. My bad. Seattle at Minnesota. That's an interesting matchup. I like Minnesota there just because they're at home. Seattle, the defense isn't what it used to be. But what about you?
You know, two teams that, you know, one team that's supposed to be really good in Seattle at 6-5, one team that kind of came out of nowhere in the Minnesota Vikings at 8-3. You know, these teams are pretty evenly matched on paper. I would say that the gut says Seattle in this one, even on the road. But, you know, the Minnesota Vikings have done nothing but surprise this year. So to hold serve at home would be a big deal as they're, you know, trying to separate themselves from the Green Bay Packers in the AFC North race.
NFC North. The Jets and the Giants. And that game is in New York, Jeff.
Is
that,
it?
It's in New York.
Who's the home team?
The Jets do not have far to travel.
The Giants are the home team, Steve. Jets and Giants. I like the Jets. And what say you?
I like the Giants. I've been waiting for the Giants to kind of pull away from the rest of the NFC East the rest of the year. I think they're a ton above. And
didn't they lose to the Redskins last week, Jeff? Or did you miss that game too?
They've lost to a lot of teams this year. They're 5-6. I mean, this is a division that's not very good on the whole. You know, I think the Redskins and the Cowboys are two not very good football teams. I've said it all year. I think the Eagles stink. I'm just waiting for the Giants to kind of be the last man standing in that division.
Okay, Kansas City at Oakland, a chance for Oakland to move to 6-6 and be right in the thick of things. Kansas City has won several games in a row and has put themselves in playoff contention. At Oakland, that makes a little bit of a difference. I still like Kansas City, but it is in Oakland, Jeff.
I like Kansas City after the 1-5 start. You know, they're rolling. They're the team that I thought that they were all year. They're a little bit like the Giants, except I think that they're doing a little bit more to bounce back from the bad start.
They're like the Giants. The Giants are losing games. The Chiefs are winning games.
I'm talking 5-6 and 6-5. I'm talking about teams with playoff prospects. I mean, everybody left the Chiefs for dead early in the season. You can say the same about Oakland. I think these are two teams on the rise, chasing Denver, leaving San Diego in their dust.
Okay. I actually think Steve is making more sense than you on this segment today. What?
The only thing worth watching on the Giants is Odell Beckham Jr. He's amazing.
Yeah, he is. Thanks for that, Steve. Indianapolis at Pittsburgh, Jeff. That's the Sunday night game. Good matchup on NBC for Sunday night. Both teams jockeying for playoff position. And Matt Hasselbeck at quarterback for Indianapolis. Pittsburgh still struggled last week in Seattle. So with this one, it's in Pittsburgh. So I like Pittsburgh. Let's listen to Mike Tomlin on this game against the Colts.
They're a hot team right now. They've won their last three games. They found a way to gain traction in the midst of adversity, and you got to tip your cap to them for that. But when you really study them, it's not surprising, really, that they've been able to find traction in the midst of that adversity, just knowing what the men who've elevated their roles are capable of, because I've been in the league for a number of years. Matt Hasselbeck is a savvy veteran signal caller, the type of guy that's capable of doing what he's done. That's why you have a savvy veteran guy like him around. That's the luxury that we enjoyed a number of years when we had guys like Charlie Batch and Byron Leftwich as backup quarterbacks. You know that they're capable of carrying the load. You know that they're extremely comfortable in doing so. You know that they're not going to do anything to negatively adverse affect the journey. They're going to spread the ball to necessary people. They can make good and quick decisions. They're going to minimize negativity. He's done all those things.
Indianapolis at Pittsburgh, Jeff. Who do you like?
You know, I like the Steelers in this one. The Colts are coming in hot, but, you know, there's a reality to what the Colts are and, you know, what they're limited to with Matt Hasselbeck. I commend them on doing what they've been able to do without the services of Andrew Luck. And the organization seems to be a little bit out of whack right now. I don't know what Ryan Grigson's future is. I don't know how impatient Jim Irsay is. I know that this is a guy that wants to win Super Bowls, so his expectations are high. But, you know, I don't know if he has the horses to do it, no pun intended, with the Colts. Steelers, on the other hand, are just, you know, next man up. They survive it, and, you know, they show what a good organization is able to do, you know, whether it's surviving injuries or just, you know, overcoming adversity. I think the Steelers are on a race for the playoffs. I think it's going to end up being them and the Chiefs in the AFC wild card. So, I expect Houston to kind of run away with that Colts division in the AFC South. And I expect Pittsburgh to win a close one on Sunday night.
That's Sunday night. Now, Arizona at St. Louis. St. Louis kind of reeling. Arizona really doing well. Only two losses all year for the Cardinals. Let's hear from wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald.
You always put a little bit of extra emphasis on division games and especially home games. You only get eight of them during the season. To drop a divisional game at home, you know, it was a devastating blow, you know, to a good start of the season. And, you know, we definitely, you know, we need to make up for that loss. I mean, you can't ever take them back, but, you know, you can have something that's, you know, kind of a makeup. And, you know, this team is, you know, haven't lost a division game all season. I mean, they beat Seattle already. They beat us. They beat San Francisco. So, I mean, we understand, you know, what we're getting ourselves into is the most physical team, you know, that we play all season.
If things kept going as they are right now, Jeff, and there was a Carolina-Arizona matchup in Carolina, how do you think the Cardinals would fare there? I know that's a tough question, but I just thought I'd throw it out.
That's a really tough question. I mean, I think that's one of those games, despite the fact that Carolina is still perfect. That's one of those games where I tend to favor the home team. I like the idea. I like what Bruce Arians has James Betcher doing with the defense there in Arizona. I think they're a force to be reckoned with. But Carolina is obviously solid on both sides of the ball. I think that, you know, it's an interesting matchup because when the Cardinals have the ball, you have a plus defense going up against a plus offense. And when Carolina has the ball, you have playmakers on both sides of the ball. But Cam Newton's just embraced the game. I think that he's taken what their offense does to a new level, something that, you know, Gus Malzahn was limited with, down at Auburn when he was in college. And, you know, he was branded more of a college quarterback. I think he's adjusted to the NFL game, and I think that the NFL game has had to evolve for guys like Newton, and you have to learn to defend a quarterback, because usually the quarterback, you know, when you're talking 11-on-11, the quarterback is the one guy that's unaccounted for, and Newton takes advantage of that a lot. I think the Cardinals would limit that. I think it would be a close game. I actually like the Arizona Cardinals in that one, but you know, I feel like anything I say that's disparaging to Carolina going 16-0 or Carolina winning the Super Bowl is not respecting what they've been able to do so far. And, you know, give it up for Riverboat Ron and Newton and, you know, what they've been able to do with that offense, because their running back is him. It's not Fozzie Whitaker or, you know, Jonathan Stewart. You know, D'Angelo Williams is checked out. But, you know, this is a team that's built around their defense, and they score a lot of defensive touchdowns. And Carson Palmer, if there's any negative to his game in 2015, it's that he does tend to throw the interception, at inopportune moments. So, you know, he survived it against Seattle. I don't know that Carolina would let their foot off the gas as easily as Seattle did. This game is going to be interesting because St. Louis came in, and they're one of the two losses, and they came into the Bird's Nest here in Glendale, Arizona, and took care of business. So I know the Cardinals are going to be out for revenge. It's going to be a tough game. It's going to be played like a rivalry game, and I do expect the Cardinals to come out on top, but I don't expect them to run away with this one.
All right, the Cardinals, exciting team. I am going my wife and I and a whole bunch of people we know to the Cardinals Packers game down here in Arizona. Jeff and I come to you from Arizona. And we're taking a party bus from a restaurant called the Angry Crab. Sounds like something Steve had to deal with back in his younger years.
No, it sounds like that's what all those Packer fans are going to wake up with, Angry Crabs.
Yeah, been reading a lot about that game. I think it's December 27th, and you know, the ticket brokers in Wisconsin are saying it's going to look like Lambeau South out there in Glendale, Arizona for this one. But if the Packers play anything like they did in the first half, they won't get a chance at redemption in the second half. You know, the Lions let them off the hook. I don't think the Cardinals would be so yielding to a team from the Midwest coming in and bossing them around in their place. So it might be a fun. Yeah, I hope it's a fun time for you, Dave.
I think
as far as the Green Bay Packers' success is concerned, on that game against Arizona, I think they're going to have problems. I mean, the game's a couple weeks out, so we don't know how, you know, what injuries are going to shape up like and whatnot. But I like the way the Arizona Cardinals are playing. I still don't like the way the Green Bay is playing, despite the victory. I mean, you know, turning point, you know, that could be the flash point for their season to say, all right, you know, we were falling, but this is where we got back up. You know, this is where we said, you know, Minnesota, Chicago, they don't play on our level. We're going to run away with the division, and we could be in a very different spot on the NFL landscape. Come December 27th.
A party bus from the Angry Crab. You think I'm going to have a good time? Oh, I'm hoping to see the end of the game.
He'll have a good time before they even leave the parking lot.
Oh, I've been. You know, I've been there, Packer Dave. I've taken a double-decker bus from Chandler, Arizona, all the way around the 101 out to Glendale for a hockey game. I don't remember the first period of that game or the second or the third.
Dallas at Washington. The Washington Redskins, dominant NFC East. They're way ahead in the division. Dallas right there, a couple games behind. It's a tough battle of two great NFC East. Well, a couple of bad teams battling out in a bad division. But at home, I like the Redskins. I just don't even know if Dallas is going to win another game all year.
I'm kind of with you on that. Yeah, I'd like to disagree with you, but you know, and I really don't care for anything Washington's doing, but they're managing to win football games, and I think the Cowboys are not going in a different direction. But you know, I just don't think the Cowboys are all the way there with or without Tony Romo this season. They've been bit by the injury bug, and they're facing the karmic gods for signing, you know, Greg Hardy when they let DeMarco Murray walk, you know, because, you know, over a financial situation, but they found that money to pay Greg Hardy. So good for Dallas if they don't win another game.
Exactly. It's Jerry's team. So all Cowboys fans are held hostage by Jerry Jones because he owns a team. He's not letting go. He's going to run it. He's going to tell everybody in the organization what to do. And a season like this couldn't happen to a better team, better owner. And
he's got a nice little puppet there in Jason Garrett, who is Teflon as far as pink slipping is concerned. And no matter how poorly or well the Cowboys perform, Jason Garrett's going to be their head coach as long as Jared Jones, you know, as long as Jared Jones is running things, you're going to have Jason Garrett as your head coach, and you're going to have Tony Romo as your quarterback. I don't see them being disloyal to either one of those guys or, you know, talking about diminishing skills or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, I heard when Dez Bryant went off on that reporter a couple weeks ago, and right in the midst of all that, Jason Garrett walked in the room, took a look at what was going on, turned around, walked right back out. Do you think Vince Lombardi would have walked back out? He'd have walked right into the mix of that and said, "What the hell's going on here?" And fixed it.
There's leadership for you.
Well, you know, I don't even know if I'd want the job anymore if I was Jason Garrett. It's like, if you're not calling your own shots, then what's it worth? You have to take all the blame, too. And then people are saying things exactly like you're saying. You have no control. You're under Jerry Jones' thumb.
No accountability.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it comes down to. So that's the slate here. Tell us a bit about the Suits and Laterals podcast before we head out of here.
Well, you know, the Suits and Laterals podcast, we like to talk about the games. You know, the games are always interesting, but there's a lot that goes on off the field, and that's kind of the suit side, the business side. This week was more football related because we were talking about coaches potentially on the hot seat, you know, coaches looking to get pink slipped at the end of the year, you know, Black Monday after the season ends. It's interesting because there's probably a third of the league that's absolutely safe. You have that Tom Coughlin division. You have the coaches that get another year, and then you have the coaches that, you know, why bother? Why bother finishing the season? Why bother retaining this guy into 2016? I think that we're facing a situation like that with my Cleveland Browns. I think that there's a few other places where, I look at San Diego. They're going to be rebooting everything. They might be without Rivers. You know, ditto for New Orleans. They might be without their head coach. They might be without their quarterback next year. So a lot of changes coming in the National Football League. We're trying to stay on top of them. We're trying to speculate as to who's safe and who's not. And, of course, like I said, we talk about the games, talk about the exciting things that happen on the field. And we look ahead. We look at what we need to look for the games, similar to what we do on this program.
All right, we got about 4 minutes here for college football, Steve.
All right, let's take 1 minute on each one of the four championship games on Saturday, starting with Florida and Alabama down in Atlanta.
If Alabama shows up, they're going to win this game. And that game is interesting because it's really the easiest avenue for a team like Ohio State, a team on the couch, maybe a Notre Dame, to sneak into one of those four spots. Because the other four, the other three seem to be kind of locked down. I think that we like Oklahoma. I think that we have Oklahoma already slated in. We look at that ACC championship game, and I'll let you get to that in a second. But, we look at a lot of these games as the winner is going to be locked in. I think that I look at a Florida team, if they could upset Alabama, I don't know that you can look at their loss to Florida State, their loss to LSU, the lack of any other game of note on Florida's schedule and say, all right, because they're the SEC champ, we're going to put them in. I think Alabama is in a situation where they win the game, they're on the number one line. They lose the game, they're out of it altogether, and they're probably playing in one of those access bowls.
They got the over-under at 40. Don't you think that's a little generous? I could see that game being, 10-7, 14-10.
Yeah, given what Florida's defense is able to do, if they could bottle up Derrick Henry early and late, that's a possibility. It's a low-scoring game. I'm looking at it as probably like a 24-3, 24-10 game in Alabama's favor.
With Derrick Henry running all over the place. Okay. USC Stanford. USC took the interim tag off Coach Clay Helton. Hopefully that may give them a little extra inspiration. Stanford kind of on the outside looking in right now.
It's going to be a tough sailing for them because the two losses and that Northwestern loss is an albatross. I mean, you can get away with losing to Oregon, especially people are going to look at Oregon as a three-loss team and they're going to say, they're not the same team that lost those three games early. I don't know how much that hurts Michigan State. I wouldn't think that it would because that game was played really early, but we saw Vernon Adams in that game. We saw a lot of what Oregon could do, and we saw a lot of what Michigan State could do back in September when they hosted the Ducks. This is a game for Stanford to really solidify their place in the Rose Bowl. I look at USC as one of those four-loss teams that you really that the Pac-12 really hopes doesn't end up winning the conference and representing the Pac-12 in the Rose Bowl at 9-4.
So now we'll jump to the last game before we get to the ACC game in terms of Michigan State and Iowa. That's a true play-in game.
You would think so. I mean, either way you look at it, Nebraska could be Michigan State could be undefeated if not for a controversial call against the Nebraska Cornhuskers, their only loss of the season. I think that they nullified any bad tidings that you have about the Spartans, because they beat Ohio State. But I would think that Iowa, this would be the win that gets them in. I mean, it's hard to deny a Big Five 13-0 conference champ from a Power Five. So I think either one of those teams is in.
Oh yeah.
I think that if Iowa loses, they might fall to a place that's not that's not held in high regard like the Rose Bowl. I think the Rose Bowl looks at a one-loss Iowa against a one-loss Ohio State team, and they're going to take the brand name.
Oh, I don't doubt that for a minute. But whoever wins that game is going to be in the Final Four. Now, lastly, UNC-Clemson. UNC still getting hampered by that early season loss to South Carolina. They're actually behind two two-loss teams in their own conference at 10, whereas, you know, you could, some in some ways, they've rattled off 11 wins in a row, could make a claim that they should be, you know, number 5, 6, or 7.
Yeah, I mean, 5, 6, or 7 is a good slotting for North Carolina, but I think that if you look at it, they didn't play Florida State, and they're behind Florida State in the standings, despite Florida State having two losses. I think you look at Florida State as that other team from the ACC that's in an access bowl, should Clemson hold serve. If North Carolina wins, I think it throws everything out of whack. I think you got to consider, you know, like I said, you know, would they beat Florida State? And more importantly, in the head-to-head, would they beat Ohio State or Stanford? You know, it depends on, you know, I mean, it's the highest ranked teams. So it's not just a necessarily a head to head between some of the teams on the outside looking in and North Carolina. But a win over Clemson would be really convincing.
I mean, it should be a very exciting game. You got two high powered offenses, two teams that don't play a whole lot of defense. So you're going to see a lot of, you know, 50, 60 yard passes, long runs, special plays. It's going to probably be the best game of the day.
Well, look at the common opponent in NC State, and NC State really took Clemson to, you know, to the brink, and, you know, whereas North Carolina handled them easily. But, you know, North Carolina is just such an enigma. I mean, if you're comparing them to Ohio State, you've got the Virginia Tech game, you've got the Illinois game to compare. Ohio State had a little tougher time with Illinois, whereas they beat, you know, Virginia Tech pretty soundly, and North Carolina needed, you know, a field goal to, you know, to beat them 30-27. So it would be an interesting matchup. I think that it doesn't serve North Carolina well when you think about history, and you have to, you know, you consider a lot of things that shouldn't matter when you're determining 2015 playoff teams. But I think that Ohio State would have the upper leg, you know, even though we'd have the recency of seeing North Carolina beat Stanford on Saturday.
Very well. Dave?
All right, Jeff Rich, and check him out Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern time on the Sports Byline USA Network, 8 a.m. Pacific at sportsbyline.com. Good information there for Sunday mornings. We'll be back with our professor of sports, John Poulter, talking hockey when we return on the Weekend Sports Report.
You know, once the temperature really starts to drop, your utility bills will start going up. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll talk about some simple ways to keep them under control right after this.
When it comes to construction adhesive, professional contractors know what matters most: dependability, strength, and quick dry time. Introducing new Tight Bond Fast Set polyurethane construction adhesive. It builds strength faster than other polyurethane adhesives. Use it to bond dozens of materials in any construction, remodeling, or home repair project. Tight Bond Fast Set. It works for the pros. It'll work for you. For more information, visit tightbond.com or see them on Facebook.
We often talk about things like adding insulation to your attic and replacing drafty windows to make your home more energy efficient, but those things do take time and money. There are, however, some really simple things you can do to make a big impact on your utility bills. First, set back your thermostat about 10 degrees when you're away from home for 8 hours or more. You'll shave as much as 10% off your energy bill without sacrificing any comfort. Check your furnace filter and replace it if it's dirty. That dirt makes it work harder to heat the house, so it's much less efficient. Finally, make sure that your south-facing windows aren't blocked so that they can collect all of that free solar heat during the daylight hours. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
If you have a rodent problem in your home, any remedy is temporary until you prevent them from entering. For a permanent solution, buy Excluder. Rodent and pest barriers, made of a patented blend of coarse stainless steel and polyfibers, Excluder permanently seals holes and crevices where rodents enter. No chemicals or pesticides, and Excluder door sweeps stop entry under your doors. See it all online at buyXcluder.com. That's buyXcluder.com. buyXcluder.com.
Painting just got easier with Handy Paint products. Hey, kick the bucket, paint like a professional with fewer spills and faster cleanups with the Handy Paint Pail and Paint Cup. Easy come, easy roll, the Handy Paint Tray, Roller Cup, and Roller Pail are perfect for all projects big and small. And if you're climbing the ladder, use the multi-use Handy Ladder Pail for all your projects, the safe way to transport paint and tools on a ladder. Painting just got easier with Handy Paint Pail products. Back on the Weekend Sports Report, Packer Dave, along with Steve Leventhal. After the big Packer win Thursday night, gotta tell you, very exciting. And somebody who actually heard me holler and scream from here in Tempe, Arizona, all the way to Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He heard me. His name is John Poulter. He's our professor of sports. We're going to talk hockey and soccer with him. John, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks, Dave. Hope you are as well. And hello to you, Steve.
Hi there, hi there, hi there. Yeah, Dave was pretty excited.
Well, you...
Well, I can tell you, I got home from the curling rink around 10:30, did a little channel flipping, watched the last bit of the Toronto-Minnesota hockey game. Then I flipped to the Packer game when I realized it was still on. I couldn't believe that ending. The final play, second final play before the touchdown throw with the face mask penalty, I thought I was watching that college football game from back in the early 80s when they had the band on the field with all those laterals and so on. But that play by Rogers on the bonus play, I guess is what we should call it, was unbelievable. That thing must have been in the air 65, close to 70 yards. And I got to tell you, about 11:29 Eastern time, I heard this great yelp, and I heard it from, I think, from the southwest. And I'm sure it was Dave when he was watching the game live at home.
I've been to your house, and, you know, you've got pretty strong insulation in those walls, too. So it had to be a strong scream.
Well, I think it was, Dave. And let's be honest, when the Packers win, I think you generally do tend to get a little excited.
Well, that one was incredible. You'll one never forget where you were. When it kind of like the Nixon resignation. You'll never forget where you were when that happened. And we were watching it with two Canadians, actually, John. A couple of people from Niagara-on-the-Lake are here visiting. So we were watching
it. Oh, okay.
They got lucky and got to see it just like you. Very exciting. But you are an expert in other areas, soccer, baseball, and hockey. So hockey is what John's going to talk about right now, our professor of sports, John Poulter from Toronto. And Steve and John get into this discussion each week. A couple minutes on hockey and a couple minutes on soccer, Steve. So, John, take us into what's going on in the hockey world right now.
Well, it continues to get very tight from a team standpoint. Thursday night, Washington went into Montreal, beat the Canadiens 3-2. Putting Washington in first place in the Metropolitan Division and 4 points behind the Canadiens in the overall Eastern Conference. But Dallas in the West continues to roll, and with their win and the Canadiens' loss on Thursday night, that puts Dallas in first place. Although both teams have 41 points, Dallas holds the tiebreaker with the number of wins. But to me, the big news in hockey for Chicago fans is this incredible streak that Patrick Kane is on. Thursday night, he had 3 points in Ottawa to tie all-time great Bobby Hull's record of scoring a point in 21 games. And boy, this guy's been consistent in those 21 games where he's got 35 points. 11 of the games, he's got 1 point. 10 games, he's got multiple points. He's got points in 10 of those games at home, 11 on the road. And the points are pretty evenly split as well, with 19 coming at home at 6 and 16 on the road. So talk about consistency. Is it possible that Mr. Kane finally has his act together, and perhaps this little scare over the summer has put him in a situation now where he realizes that he's a very fortunate individual? And I guess the other highlight from a Blackhawks standpoint is the continued outstanding play of 24-year-old rookie Artemi Panarin. He also had 3 points this last game, and he now finds himself the leading scorer amongst rookies in the NHL with 26 points, and playing on that line with Anisimov and Kane, between the three of them, they've got 85 points. So that obviously is a combination that's clicking really well, and this kid Panarin, he could be a real find. He's very much like Patrick Kane in terms of excitement and somebody that you want to watch, and hopefully he continues that play and the Blackhawks can hang on to him for a number of years.
I see. And there, you know, there was a really neat story, I guess, in last week's Sports Illustrated for, you know, Dallas's star, so to speak. I don't know. How do you pronounce his last name? Tyler Seguin?
Tyler Seguin.
Seguin.
Yeah, he's actually from Brampton, Ontario, which is a suburb or a small town, satellite town about 30 miles northwest of Toronto. But I guess the family heritage at some point in time had some French Canadian blood in it. But yeah, he's quite a character, and to look at him, you would not think that he is the type of individual that Sports Illustrated clearly indicate that he is. I have a feeling Boston might have made a mistake on him when they dealt him to Dallas. And another example of some shrewd trading by Dallas general manager Jim Nill. We talked last week about the Patrick Sharp pickup, and I think Seguin is probably in the same category. And between the two of them, they're doing a great job for the Stars.
That's one of those maybe Dallas has done a little larceny.
More than a little. You know, like the Sharp trade is very one-sided as it looks right now in terms of the Blackhawks' return on it. Trevor Daley has not been anything close to what I think most of us imagined he would be when he came to Chicago. And it was obviously a salary cap driven deal, and we all knew it was coming. Sharp was the odd guy out in terms of the big boys salary wise that some of them couldn't be moved. Some of them you wouldn't want to move. Some of them fell into both of those categories. But I think Patrick Sharp has been a big loss to the Blackhawks. And I'm not suggesting for one minute that the Hawks would be in a lot better shape if Sharp had been playing for them all season. But certainly the fact that he's playing for a division rival has not helped the Blackhawks at all.
Now, how are things looking out in the East?
Well, that's getting a little tighter. You know, it's a little bit more streaky. In the West, the longest winning streak is two games. The longest losing streak is two games. But in the East, we've got Washington has won six in a row, the Islanders three, the Panthers four, and the Philadelphia Flyers three. So we've got a few streaks going there, and that's getting very tight at the top. We've got 4 points covering the top three teams, Montreal, Washington, and the Rangers. And there's a couple of other teams that are starting to make a bit of a push as well. So lots of good hockey to be played in both conferences over the next couple of weeks before we hit the holiday season.
So have the Red Wings benefited by being moved into the East? Yay, nay? Jury's still out?
I'm going to guess and say that, you know, performance-wise on the ice, Steve, the jury is probably still out. Certainly it helps them from a couple of standpoints, one being the travel, two being the reinvention of the natural rivalries with traditional six teams, Boston, Montreal, Toronto, and the Rangers, sort of reduces the number of games with the Blackhawks, which was always a key matchup when those two teams met, as it is in any sport. But I think the biggest thing for the Red Wings is the travel reduction, and also the fact that they're playing more games in their time zone. With the exception of Columbus, I believe most of the Western teams are at least one time zone behind Detroit. So I think from a fan standpoint, it has certainly helped. I know many years ago, the Toronto Maple Leafs were in the Western Conference as well. And it got a little tiresome by the end of the year, watching too many games starting at 9 and sometimes 9:30 or later. You didn't manage to catch all of the games, especially if it was on a work night.
I see. All right. Well, let's jump over to soccer since we don't have a lot of time for this segment today. We'll start with the standings where, again, there's 2 points basically separating the top four teams and the table.
Yeah, those games last week were a big contributor to a logjam at the top, as we kind of talked about the possibility of that happening when we had this conversation last week. But, you know, we're now looking at Manchester City and Leicester City tied with 29 points. Manchester United right on their heels with 28. And Arsenal with 27, and Tottenham still pushing at 25. But the team that's probably making a big move there is Liverpool. You know, they were down in the doldrums for the first few games of the season, fired their manager, Brendan Rodgers, and here they are now sitting in sixth place with 23 points. So they're moving in the right direction. So that's getting to be a very interesting set of standings. And at the other end, it's getting just as nasty. Teams 16 through 20 are covered by between 13 points and 5 points. And Aston Villa are really the only team that's right out of it. They're sitting at the bottom with 5 points. So that sort of leaves teams 15 through 19 between 10 points and 14 points. So getting very close. Some good games this weekend. I think perhaps the most interesting game this weekend will be in in Swansea, where Leicester City are the visitors. Swansea's been struggling a little bit, but they always play well at the Liberty Stadium in South Wales. So this is going to be a big test for Leicester City, and Leicester City have got some of the big boys coming up in the next few weeks. So I think by the end of the holiday season, we'll know for sure whether Leicester City is for real or not.
And then just lastly, real quick, Chelsea finally has a home game against a middling team. If they can't win this game, then they're definitely in the garbage can.
They're in serious trouble if they don't beat Bournemouth at home, and I don't say that to downplay Bournemouth. Bournemouth is a pretty good team for a team that came up from the Championship and a team that has come up from relatively nowhere in a very short period of time. But they're sitting in 18th place with 10 points. Chelsea's just above that relegation zone in 14th place with 15 points. So if by some chance Bournemouth manages to eke out a win, there's some big trouble at Stamford Bridge in West London.
All right, Dave?
All right, John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We do it each week with him here on the Weekend Sports Report. We want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Weekend Sports Report. You can check us out at tunein.com. You can hear us on Fridays on milehighradio.com, Saturdays on zcomradio.com, and that's the choice at zcomradio.com. Also at internetfm.com, podcasts available every Friday afternoon we post them. And the easiest way, PackerDaveShow.com takes you right to the site, PackerDaveShow.com. What?
Dave, we can't go without sending our condolences to the family of Marty Zibben of ZCOM, as I lost his wife this week. So, from everybody here, our sympathies and our condolences.
Of course. And Marty, best of luck to you out there. We are sorry for your loss. And we'll see you next week right here on the Weekend Sports Report.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get some beer, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. To club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.
Did your Thanksgiving guest turn your carpet into a yucky mess? I'm Danny Lepford with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll talk about some simple ways to do damage control right after this.
When the power goes out, your life is disrupted. Heat, air conditioning, refrigeration, phones, all gone. Want to take back control? A Generac Home Standby Generator protects your home against power outages every second of every day, all year long, automatically, whether you're home or away. Control your power, control your life with a Generac Home Standby Generator.
For more information, visit Generac.com or call 855-886-8203.
The combination of friends, family, and food at holiday time can leave your house looking like a war zone. And if you have carpeting, you know it takes some of the worst punishment of all. But there is hope for even the toughest stains and spills. Here are a few examples. To remove chewing gum, put several ice cubes in a plastic bag and hold it on the gum so that you can freeze the sticky stuff. When it hardens, scrape it away with a butter knife. For greasy stains like lipstick, blot up the excess with a clean cloth and then use dry cleaning fluid to lift the stain. For spilled fruit juice or soft drink stains, mix a few teaspoons of laundry detergent with white vinegar in a quart of warm water and sponge the spot well. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.